This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's 5 o'clock on the most listened to sports talk show for your ride home.
What?
It is time for the Falcons Report.
Whoa, whoa.
KZ got another pick. Here's Julio down the far sideline and will score. Sacked. Grady Jarrett got another one. You shall not pass.
The 5 o'clock Falcons Report.
Oh, my heavens.
On Dukes and Bell.
It is Dukes and Bell on a 4th of July special, a day early, if you will. Willie P. and Nick Kale here with you in for Carl and Mike, who have the day off. It's an observed holiday, of course, inside our company, and we hope you've been keeping you entertained. 404-741-0929 is our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line on Twitter, at Willie P. Style, and, of course, at Nick Kale. Kale is spelled K-Y-A-L. I've had some fun, brother. We've made it through 3-2 to play, and I tell you what, Rand, the pie is looking good. All the beer inside my fridge is chilled, and I can't wait to crack it all open here in a couple hours.
Now, be completely honest. We've done 3 hours, so we've had about 9 commercial breaks. How many times have you scurried off into the kitchen and taken a little bit of a swipe of that pie?
Every darn time I'm looking at that peach pie. Every time I'm going in. Every time I'm going in and looking at it, and it's about ready to come out of that oven, so I'm excited. Of course, you got to have it. Yeah, it's got to cool first. You
might make
sure that the crust sets, and you know, but it's going to be very, very difficult to not want to scoop right in there and enjoy that. And again, thanks to Julianne, of course, for that perspective. We've been talking a lot about the stuff involving coronavirus, but we want to go and kind of focus things back on the field. We did get some good news from Major League Baseball here just a couple minutes ago, if you missed it. Only 1.2%, and I say only 1.2%, because that's lower than the other leagues that have provided over the course of the last couple of weeks. 1.2% of Major League Baseball's tests were positive when it comes to coronavirus. 38 out of 3,185, 1.2%. That's, again, 31 players, 7 staff members, 11 teams had no one test positive, 19 teams had one or more positives. And again, we'll talk about this coming up in about 20 minutes when Joe Patrick, our Braves insider, joins us here on Dukes and Bell. We were talking earlier in the show, Nick, about Matt Ryan with respect to his standing in the league toward the rest of the league. And if there's one thing that's still not on his ledger that would make him an absolute cinch to have his bust in Canton, it would be a Super Bowl. I think he's already there in terms of his numbers. I think it'd be pretty hard to ignore the numbers he has on his mind or has on his resume overall. To me, I think he's already in, but the question we've been asking is, do you believe that Matt Ryan is the best active quarterback in terms of resume without a Super Bowl? I think you and I both agree that he is.
Yeah, I think it's very hard to argue against Matt Ryan adamantly and give me a better candidate. I mean, you could go recency bias with Lamar Jackson winning the MVP last year, and that's fine. But my counter to that is, well, let me know when he wins a playoff game. Deshaun Watson, we've gotten a lot of pushback on Deshaun Watson. I think he's one of the 6 or 7 best quarterbacks in the league. But right now, tell me, what is his biggest accomplishment as a pro? And I would say Matt Ryan's MVP trumps all of that. So a lot of guys you could rattle off, but I think maybe career-wise, Philip Rivers. But right now, I would take Matt Ryan over Rivers and that terrible arm.
It is our poll question of the day on Twitter at Willie P Style and on Twitter at Nick Kale. It's part of our 5 o'clock Falcon support, which is brought to you by Domino's, whose Domino's Tracker now lets you customize GPS-enabled delivery alerts so you know exactly when to expect your pizza. Try it next time you order two or more two-topping medium pizzas for $5.99 each. Pan pizza will be extra. Ask for that specific offer. Availability and charges may vary from Domino's. Yeah, I tend to, you know, the Phil Rivers thing, you know, he's had his career kind of go into some decline right now. Of course, the Colts are trying to catch some lightning in a bottle with him, with motivation after he departed his gig, not only in San Diego, but also Los Angeles with that franchise. I think he was saddled with a bad franchise, and I think his skills probably deserve a better one. My thing, though, with Matt is that, you know, his numbers have been pretty consistent over his career. He stayed on the field. I think his actual biggest competition in this realm is Cam Newton, because I think Cam Newton, when you think about the two MVP seasons that both have had, I think Cam's almost feels superior to what Matt brought to the table. The problem with Cam is he hasn't stayed on the field, and the last three seasons, he's only has three winning seasons inside his time. And again, I'm not necessarily one to look at quarterback wins as a big stat, but if you aren't having the kind of impact on your team where you are having seismic change and leading your team to victory, that could be a knock against you when you're talking about your NFL hierarchy.
Yeah, I guess I'm a little bit less enamored with Cam post MVP run just because of the overall record, 23-23, the quarterback rating of 82 since his MVP season. I mean, if your quarterback rating is not 95 or better in this day and age, where you can't play defense, you're not allowed to play defense, and the league is geared towards skill players and quarterbacks and yards and points and fantasy production, that works against Cam Newton, in my opinion.
68% of you who have surveyed on our Twitter accounts, at Willie P. Style and at Nick Kale, say that they believe that Matt Ryan is the best active quarterback without the Super Bowl. Juan tweets us and says that he believes that Philip Rivers, before his decline, was one of the best to not win a Super Bowl, again, amongst active quarterbacks. I also wanted to kind of bring this back, and I was talking about this the other night. The top five Falcons for this upcoming season on each side of the ball. Now, I excluded both Matt Ryan and Julio Jones on offense, as well as Grady Jarrett and Deion Jones on defense, because I think when you put any list of the best on those sides of the football, those four guys would be on it for their respective sides. But outside of those four, your five best on each side of the football, we'll start with the offense.
Okay, I did it this way from the standpoint of guys that are coming back that were on the team last year, but also new faces in Atlanta. So I mixed those two together. Let me know what you think. One through five for me, offensively, minus Matty Ice and Julio. Alex Mack, Calvin Ridley, Jake Matthews, Todd Gurley, Hayden Hurst.
I had Hayden Hurst. I had Todd Gurley. My question here, as far as, you know, top five that we need to see more from, and as far as that goes, I think you need to figure out what's going on at left guard. That's my biggest question mark right now in terms of the Falcons, about the kind of the ones that you want to see really emerge in the 2020 season. You know, there have been talks that Matt Gano is going to try and get some work there. Of course, the rookie Matt Hennessy, there's talk that he could possibly emerge as somebody who comes on at the end of that season. But yeah, I believe Calvin Ridley is positioned and posed for a breakout season. I think that Gurley is very, very much in an opportunity for a potential bounce back, not only from the standpoint of what he can do for the Falcons on the field, but I'm more curious about what he can do in the red zone, because this team, as you know, Nick, has over the course of the last couple of years really struggled when you get in the shadow of the opposing goalpost. If Todd Gurley can fix the ills that this team has had in terms of scoring position, I'm all for whatever ends up coming their way in terms of being able to make that happen. And as far as a guy you didn't mention, Russell Gage, I think, is part of the reason why the Falcons were so confident in their ability to trade Mohamed Sanu and not lose a step. I love what you said about Hayden Hurst. I think he's been underutilized everywhere that he's been inside the National Football League. And also, I think he was underutilized in college at South Carolina. I think that the way that Matt Ryan uses tight ends I think can fit his game very, very well. And people will look at that and say, you know what? We really didn't need Austin Hooper. I think you can get just the same out of Hayden Hurst.
Yeah, I'm with you. And let me go back to Gurley for a second because you made a good point about the red zone. I literally don't care if Todd Gurley rushes for 1,000 yards. I mean, if you told me right now I'm going to get 12 carries a week, I'm going to get 60 yards, and I'm going to get one or two touchdowns inside their green zone, that's all I need from Todd Gurley.
Yeah, and again, this is, again, we're looking at the top five Falcons to watch for on each side of the ball in terms of this season. You know, the reason I don't have Jake and Alex on this list, not that I don't think that they're good or they're not important, but I think those guys are known entities right now. I think you know what you're getting out of Jake Matthews. Again, aside from the opening play of the season, where he gave up a sack against Minnesota, Jake was pretty solid. A lot of the Pro Football Focus metrics, and again, think of those what you might, really had him pegged very well amongst his peers in terms of left tackles and people who protect the blind side of quarterbacks in the NFL. And Alex Mack, the only thing that I think people worry about with him is Father Time, when that catches up. Because the one thing about offensive linemen, and you know this, Nick, is that when it goes bad, it goes bad very much very quickly. It falls off the cliff. And so my only worry is, you know, at what point does Alex Mack's productivity decline and diminish? We haven't seen it yet, but you wonder about that.
Yeah, and you can also mask it a little bit in the interior of the offensive line. I think you get a little bit more exposed when you're out on the edge like Jake Matthews is. You know, a prime example would be Jason Peters with the Eagles. You know, you can clearly see the skill set diminish with him with age and injury. So I think it's a little bit more easily noticeable when you play on the edge.
And so the guys on the defensive side, not named Grady or Deion, that you're watching for the most in terms of your top five Falcons to watch for this upcoming season?
Okay, 1 through 5 for me. And again, same thing. Some guys that were here last year, some guys that were not, both NFL destinations elsewhere and college. I'm going to go Keanu Neal, Dante Fowler, Tack McKinley, and then I'm going to go with both rookies, Marlon Davidson and A.J. Terrell, because I think they are both very good, both good enough to start from day one. And having worked in Nashville for the last couple of years, I was really hoping the Titans would take Davidson and Terrell because those were positions of need here in Tennessee. So Neal, Fowler, McKinley, and then the rookies, Davidson and Terrell.
We agree on all but one of them. The one that I have that you did not is Foye Aluwakun, and I'll expound on the four that we agree on. I believe in Dante Fowler. I think that his greatest attribute is the fact that his name isn't Vic Beasley. And again, I know that that he's now in Nashville too, where you're currently situated, so I find that somewhat humorous.
Yep.
The fact is that Dante comes in here with very similar pedigree from where he was in Los Angeles, standing next to an all-pro defensive tackle in Aaron Donald there. He has an all-pro defensive tackle next to him here in Grady Jarrett. So I agree with you on Dante Fowler. I also agree with you on A.J. Terrell. I think Terrell, opposite Isaiah Oliver, is a player you need to really account for. I know that people get on him for the mistakes he made in the national championship game, but it was far from him was the only person who was victimized by that offense this past season. I think Joe Burrow and, you know, Ja'Marr Chase and all those guys had plenty of yards gained against cornerbacks across the country. Marlon Davidson has to take himself from a level where he was back in college and a level that he will start the season with, which I think is the first guy off the bench in terms of defensive lineman. He needs to turn himself into somebody you can't take off the field. I don't think you can make any real evaluation of what you want to do in the secondary this upcoming season until you know what Keanu Neal can and can't give you in terms of the secondary. And again, Oluwakun, if the Falcons are going to do what I think many believe they are, and that's play a 4-2-5 with five defensive backs in their base defense, the guy who stands opposite Deion Jones is going to have a lot of responsibility, and that's more responsibility than Foye has had at any point in his career.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if we saw a little bit of Deion Buchanan, but also you made a good point with A.J. Terrell. Like, I don't think you can hold the LSU game against him. The LSU, that LSU team is probably the greatest college football single-season team of all time. If you want to see A.J. Terrell put up some production, go back to 2 years ago when he picked off Tua Tagovailoa and took it to the house.
On the day where baseball comes back, some encouraging news in terms of their first set of COVID-19 tests. We talk it over with our Braves insider, Joe Patrick, next on Dukes and Bell. Willie P., Nick Cale in for the guys on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com, and the radio.com app. Dukes and Bell, Willie P. and Nick Cale here with you on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Hope you've been enjoying yourself. A little guy talk coming your way in 20 minutes, including somebody who has been known for being a mask marvel, going against the mask ordinance in a particular city and town. We will get to that a little bit later on here, about 20 minutes from right now. But before we do that, it's time for our Strong Arm Story of the Day.
The Strong Arm Story of the Day is brought to you by John Foy & Associates Personal Injury Law.
I wanted to give a chance to bring in our Braves insider, Joe Patrick, to react to the latest news. It's funny, Joe, we had all the intentions of bringing you on here, but we actually have some new stuff to talk about. I think if I'm correct, when you come to these particular numbers that we have here from Major League Baseball, encouraging numbers in terms of their first round of COVID tests.
Yeah, way better than I thought we would see. I thought we'd see somewhere around 2 or 3%, something like that. To only have 38 positives from 3,100 samples is honestly pretty impressive. I think it's got to be very a lot of optimism for Major League Baseball teams to see those numbers.
Joe, it certainly seems like positive news that, you know, 98.8% of people tested came back negative. But I got to believe it, as optimistic as I am about sports going on amid the pandemic, when we start to see travel, I mean, that's when it can become very unpredictable. I mean, I know you're not an epidemiologist, but I mean, do you think this is something that we can keep at a very minimal rate once things really get rolling with the 60-game season?
I appreciate that caveat, Nick, so we can just get that out of the way, because that is absolutely right. You know, everybody has their different takes on this, I feel like. And for me, I think what Major League Baseball is trying to do, NBA and MLS are creating a bubble, and I think that Major League Baseball is creating bubbles plural, where every team is kind of in their own little bubble that travels around. And I think you're right that when we do start see these teams traveling, do the tests start to, you know, do the positives start to tick up again? I think that that will be a very interesting thing to observe, and honestly, we aren't going to be able to observe it until around a month from now, when teams actually start traveling, because everybody will just for now be stationary in their home parks. But I think that that is the key, and that's the reason why in MLB's safety protocols there was very, very, you know, strict rules about what players can do when they do go on the road. They're pretty much going to just be stuck in their hotel rooms and on buses if they're not at the stadium when they're on the road.
That's our Braves insider, Joe Patrick. He, along with myself and Caleb Johnson, are all co-hosts of the Batter Up podcast, which you can hear on radio.com as well as anywhere you get your podcasts. So be sure to download that if you want exclusive Braves talk coming here from us at 92.9. Did want to at least get your thoughts, Joe, before we get into the Braves' first day of training. Rob Manfred's comments the other day didn't exactly put him or the owners in the most positive light. You know, the fact that he says that they were only going to get the 60 games no matter what because of the tenor of the negotiations. If I'm the players wanting to file a grievance, I'm saying that's Exhibit A for me.
Right, exactly. I feel like, Will, you and I doing the podcast, I feel like I'm having deja vu. Like, we've had this conversation before saying, what the heck is Rob Manfred saying? Like, why is he saying that? That is just not being good at your job. Yeah, I mean, that is just, he is kind of really bungled so many things when it comes to this COVID thing. And I think that he goes on to radio shows or goes on TV shows, tries to do these media appearances, and it's literally like he says something that he didn't intend to say. Like, it's like verbal diarrhea happens when he has to start talking on a microphone publicly. So maybe he should try to do less of that, and it might help out himself and some of the people that he works for. But yeah, it was shocking to hear that.
Joe Snicker spoke today, and he said that Cole Hamels threw a side today. We're just going to try to get him ready. I don't know that we'll have time to get any starter ready to go 5 to 6 innings, which is why it's good we have the depth we do, but he's still checking off boxes. So I'll ask you, I mean, what do you think is a realistic expectation for Cole Hamels this year. I still think he can win some big games and big spots, but I'm certainly not expecting Cole Hamels to do what he did 10 years ago, and maybe not even really 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, it's so interesting to predict stats when it comes to pitchers, because this year is going to be so much different, not just in terms of the 60 games, which is obviously a drastically shortened season, but also you're going to just have pitchers whose full intent is to go out there and pitch 3 innings, you know, to start a game, especially early in the season. Cole Hamels said that his goal to get ready for his first start in the first time through the rotation is to be ready to throw 50 or 60 pitches, you know, which might get him through 3 innings, four if he's lucky. So it's going to be so interesting to see how the mentality of these pitchers is during this time. You know, he talked about it. It's going to almost feel like a high school game or a college game, where instead of trying to go out there and picturing yourself and striving to throw 8 innings and give up, you know, only 3 runs or so during that time, really it's going to be more of like a reliever's mentality, where even if you're a starter, you're just trying to get out there, go put up 3 scoreless innings. And if you can do that, especially early in the season, you're going to be giving your team a huge leg up.
Joe Patrick joining us here, our Braves insider here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 99thegame.com, as well as the radio.com app. The thing that I find most curious, Joe, is the fact that, you know, we were talking about this earlier this week, is the fact that, you know, the Braves' rotational depth. And again, I know that a lot of people outside of the Braves who don't follow them necessarily as closely as we do probably don't realize this, but I think their organizational depth in terms of starting rotation, or at least pitchers who can eat 2 to 3 to 4 innings, I think they have that in spades, and I would argue probably better than anybody inside the National League East. How do you feel?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think I see it the same way. If there's one place right now in baseball where you want to have depth coming into a season like this, it's in your pitching staff, because you're going to be going through almost every single arm. That's the reason why Major League Baseball expanded the rosters to 30, because they just know that teams need extra pitchers. Essentially, you need like 2 starting pitchers every time you every game, essentially, for the first week or at least 2 weeks into the season. So there's going to be a lot of that kind of piggybacking going on. And the Braves, like you said, they have so many options they can go to. They can go to Sean Newcomb, who's a lefty who's got the starting experience. They could go to Kyle Wright, who was really impressing this spring training 1.0, I guess you would call it. Felix Hernandez has been kind of a lotto ticket that the team was able to sign him on a minor league contract, and he looked phenomenal in spring. I mean, he looked as much like Felix Hernandez as you could possibly have expected given his last couple years in the league. So the Braves really have a lot of options they can go to, and it's going to be kind of a really interesting dilemma for Brian Snicker to try to figure out how to best use all these guys.
Joe Patrick, Braves insider for 92.9 The Game, joining us from the Kia Studios. Nick and Will in for Mike and Carl today here on 92.9 The Game. So Marcell Ozuna is a guy that I like maybe a little bit more than Will. 29 home runs last year, drove in 89. Now, the average was down from his career numbers, down about 30 points. But I think when you come over to the Braves now and you're in that lineup with that protection, you should bounce back from an average standpoint and still be able to put up the production he did. Are you high on Ozuna as I am, or do you have your reservations?
I have my reservations with him, but I'm not like down on him, I would say. And I don't even think that his batting average needs to be very high. What he needs to be able to make sure he can do is hit the ball out of the ballpark, hitting probably behind Freddie Freeman there, who's going to probably get on base quite a lot. That's typically what Freddie Freeman tends to do. And I've always said, you know, I think it's going to be really interesting, and what's really going to be telling as to how effective Marcell Ozuna is and how much opposing pitchers fear pitching to him is, how many walks does Freddie Freeman get this year? What does his walk rate look like? Because if he starts getting walked a lot, that probably means that pitchers are willing to, you know, put him on base, and they're willing to pitch to Marcell Ozuna. If Marcell Ozuna is giving Freddie Freeman the kind of protection that, you know, the Braves want to see, then you're going to see Freddie Freeman get a lot more pitches to hit as well. So I think it's going to be really interesting, but there are going to be guys, you know, the Braves have a deep roster, and I think the fact that there's going to be a DH this year really helps the Braves as well, because they've got lots of options they can put in there. You can use a guy like Johan Camargo, who was as good as any Braves hitter in spring training. Austin Riley was right there with them. So he, you know, there are just so many ways the Braves could go here. And I do think that Marcell Ozuna is a guy who could, you know, be a DH himself, and the Braves could throw out, you know, maybe a guy who they prefer to have playing defense out there in the outfield, or just to give guys rest. There's so many ways Brian Snicker can manage this lineup.
looking at some of the Braves prospects here over the course of the next couple of days and weeks, you know, Joe, with the way that the roster set up initially, 30 players for the first 2 weeks, 28 for the next two before they settle on 26. Who's a player who maybe can play his way from that secondary bubble in Gwinnett either onto that 30-man roster and have some staying power and possibly stay and maybe survive the first two cuts?
I think a guy who we're going to kind of see bubble up to the major leagues this year is Christian Pache. And it's interesting to kind of say that now because we don't know exactly what the service time rules look like for someone like him to come up and actually make that squad. But I think if we were playing if we were in the middle of a regular Major League Baseball season, I think we would have seen Christian Pache by now. And the reason is because he, from what I've heard from people inside the Braves organization, he is as good of a defensive outfielder as the Braves have. You know, whether it's Ronald Acuna, whoever, Ender Inciarte, Christian Pache is right up there with him. So that gives him such a high floor to build off of. I think it would benefit the Braves to get him out there, get his defense out there in the outfield. Then you could DH a guy like a Marcelo Zuna, like we were talking about earlier. Again, I think he's a guy that a lot of fans have obviously been waiting to see Christian Pache. I think this year is going to be the year where he breaks out.
You can find Joe Patrick again here on 92.9 on most of the shows that we have here during the week, and of course also on the Batter Up podcast. Download that on the radio.com app or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much, Joe. Appreciate it. Happy 4th to you.
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
That's Joe Patrick joining us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Dukes and Bell, Willie P, and Nick in for the guys. Guy Talk comes your way next. Why July 3rd is special in the Willie P household, and more special than any other day that comes out of it. Tell you about next. Coming up, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and radio.com.
It's time for fun. It's time for Guy Talk.
Yes! Never mind.
It's time for shenanigans.
Dukes and Bell, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Willie P, Nick Cale here with you for a little bit longer. Sam Crenshaw has you covered from 7 o'clock onwards. So thanks, Sam, for stepping in for Chuckery again tonight. Nick, first Guy Talk item is as follows. Are you aware or know of the work and body of work of Zachary Levi?
Honestly, no, until I looked up the link you sent me, and now it's starting to ring a bell, but I see where you're going with this.
He is going to be the title character in the biopic for former Super Bowl champion Kurt Warner. He's going to play Kurt Warner in American Underdog, the Kurt Warner story for Lionsgate. He's 39 years old. Warner is 48. I find it funny just how much the resemblance kind of is towards him. I mean, these are always kind of very difficult because you never really know what to think about these because you want it to be as close to accurate as possible.
No, I'm with you. And it's funny, as you look at the pictures, they are, I mean, when you put this guy next to Kurt Warner in his Rams days side by side, I mean, the hair is almost identical. The salt and pepper beard with the gray sprinkled in is almost identical. From a look standpoint, I think he's got it down. Now we'll see if he can pull it off, but I would think so based on his resume.
Are you a fan of the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest?
Oh, of course. I've actually gone to it 2 times.
Get out!
Yeah. No, where I lived in Pennsylvania, I was like 40 minutes outside of Philadelphia, but I was also only about an hour and 10 minutes from New York City. So I actually went to it twice and attended it. It's unbelievable.
You know, you can get the Nathan's hot dogs in the grocery store, but something about having one of them on Coney Island just hits different.
Yeah, the ones that you get in the grocery store in the 8-pack are not the same.
They do sell the Coney Island snappers, depending on how hard you look. I know that they used to have them in Publix here. I think after the pandemic, though, they stopped selling them. They now have like the skinless or the bigger than the bun. But anyway, they will do something different this year. Instead of having it outdoors like they usually do outside at Coney Island, they're going to actually hold it inside a large open warehouse type space rather than the outdoor public location. There's only going to be 5 eaters. Joey Chestnut will be there. Matt Stoney, who I've actually had a chance to talk to, Eater X, not going to be there. So unfortunately, that's not going to that's unfortunately a tough deal for them. But Matt Stoney not going to be there. five guys. Who won the year that you went? The years that you went?
I went in 14 and 16. So I believe it was Chestnut both times.
Okay.
One thing, hey, this is what I've always found interesting is they're like, there's actually a segment of the population that doesn't watch this, doesn't care for it, or doesn't know anything about it. And I think a lot of people make the mistake of, oh, competitive eaters. So they got to be really, really fat. And then you realize when you watch this event, they're all small.
It's as much an endurance test as anything.
Yeah.
And they train, quote unquote, train to do this. So, I mean, I have total respect for those guys. Again, talking to Matt Stoney, that guy, want to talk about, he went through his regimen. I mean, it's about as serious as, bodybuilders, CrossFit guys. I mean, they do some serious training when it comes to, muscle enlargement and things of that nature.
Oh, this is a true profession. This is not just, a circus act for your entertainment on the 4th of July.
My favorite part, though, is got to be George Shea, a hype man of the stars. You want to talk about a guy who could make an ant race hype worthy. George Shea is the absolute man.
He's very good. Very good at what he does.
In the world of COVID in the state of Alabama, there's a high alert, I would say, for students in Tuscaloosa who are reportedly throwing COVID parties. Come on, Alabama. Quit messing this up for us. Apparently, there have been students where they basically are trying to get the Rona on purpose and putting money in a pot. And they try to get the Rona, and whoever gets it first gets the pot. I mean, come on. That's a terrible idea.
Roll Tide. No, but honestly, I don't think I'm overreacting when I say this. If in fact this report, because I saw this, I think it was yesterday or 2 days ago. If in fact it is 100% true, I would prosecute these punks to the fullest extent of the law.
No argument from me. No argument from me. You know the name Glenn Jacobs?
Of course. He's the mayor in Knox County.
Well, many people know him more by his stage name from the WWE days as Kane.
That is correct.
He, of course, again, the mayor of Knox County, which, of course, houses the University of Tennessee. He was the only member of the Knox County Board of Health to vote against a mask mandate for most people inside public buildings, according to the Knoxville News Sentinel. I say that only to say that how ironic, a man who wore a mask for much of his career inside the WWE is now against masks in public to prevent coronavirus.
Now, I know Chucker is a big wrestling guy. Were you a big wrestling guy when you were a kid?
I was an Attitude Era wrestling guy. The Rock, Austin, Kane, those type of guys, Undertaker. But, I grew out of it I grew out of Huggies. Is that too harsh? I'm sorry.
No.
I'm not the kind of guy who says, because it's, you think it's fake and they're not, right. They're not athletes. They're more performers. It's not that. It's just that I didn't care for the departure of some of the personalities that I had as a kid. And it didn't captivate my attention the way that it used to.
Well, that's the biggest issue with it now is they don't have the personalities. They have all these guys that have unbelievable talent in the ring, and they're all boring as hell. Like, I'm not expecting everybody to be The Rock, because The Rock is, a one-in-a-million type personality. But if you can't cut a promo on a microphone, I mean, that's half the battle right there.
I think of WWE in the same way that I think of NASCAR, not from the standpoint of anything other than the fact that you felt like the animosity was real. Like, they were better at it. They were better at their craft back when I was watching it as a kid than they are now when it comes to the animosity, the storylines, and those type of things.
See, it's funny. You bring up WWE and NASCAR. I think WWE is a lot like Saturday Night Live, where the writing, the storytelling, the delivery has all gone to crap. Like, I'm not expecting everybody to be Adam Sandler or Chris Rock or Eddie Will Murphy. Ferrell, but can I get somebody that's entertaining on a Saturday night? I mean, I'm 36. I got a wife and kids. My Saturday night club days are over. So if I turn on SNL, I want to be entertained.
I think you're very spot on with that apt comparison. Although I will say this about NASCAR. They've captured my attention over here the course of the last couple of months. They've had a lot of positive PR their way, and the fact that they've put forth some compelling content over the course of the last couple of weeks, I've bought back into NASCAR, and that probably has the greatest opportunity of keeping my attention to the things that started while we were still in the pandemic and could possibly continue. Amazon and Jeff Bezos have had a lot of positive pub for themselves, not necessarily positive pub, but positive influence and positive dollars. Well, this is not going to do them any good. Derek Lancaster of Michigan, 22 years old, says that he became sick of all the hours he had to work and the low wages and decided enough was enough. He basically left his van at a gas station with the keys in the car. He said he was getting paid $15.50 an hour. He abandoned the van filled with packages and called it quits. Also took a video of it. Fair or foul, Nick Kale?
Totally foul. One, you got to return the vehicle if you're going to quit on the spot. Two, $15.50 an hour is not living life, but it's also nothing to complain about when we've got 35 million Americans unemployed during a pandemic. So I think there's a lot of people that would gladly take the almost $16 an hour and all the excessive hours that you get because people are at home and they're shopping and buying things during a pandemic because they can't leave their house.
He was awaking at 9 o'clock in the morning, going to bed about 10 at night, making 200 to 300 stops a day. He said he just could not do it anymore. He only had worked for the company for 5 months. So there you go. Understand that. Today is the 3rd of July. And on the list of birthdays today, it includes Becky Gibbler of Full House fame, Andrea Barber, Connie Nielsen, actress, Tom Cruise, who turns 56 today, Montel Williams, who turns 62, Kurtwood Smith, who of course played the dad in That 70s Show, and Olivia Munn. But the most important birthday is my mother, who has a milestone birthday today, and because I'd probably get whacked in the head for saying how old she is today, I will refrain from saying how old she is today, but today is a milestone birthday for her. Her birthday is always on the 3rd of July, and it always gets me in so much trouble because of the fact that it usually backs up to the holiday where I'm either working or forced to work or whatever, but I can't be there with her today. I just wanted to wish her a happy birthday on this 3rd of July.
Well, happy birthday to Mama Willie P. That's number one. Enjoy your day. But number two, and this is confession time, you brought up Becky Gibbler or Kimmy Gibbler from Full
Kimmy
House.
Gibbler, yes. I'm sorry. Yeah, Kimmy Gibbler. Yes, that's it. Yes.
Yeah, I was thinking of who is Becky was the wife of
Aunt Becky. Yeah, Lori Loughlin. Yeah, that was John Judge's wife. I meant Kimmy Gibbler. I'm so sorry.
Gotcha.
That was my bad.
But I mean, both of them were fantastic. But as a kid, total crush on Kimmy Gibbler.
Really?
Total crush.
Oh man, you're such a damn nerd.
I'm just saying. Back in my wheelhouse, I'm 6 years old. It's 1990. TGIF is coming on a Friday night. I've got Urkel. I've got Full House. I've got Mr. Cooper. And I've got Kimmy Gibbler.
My first television crush, honest to God's truth, Vanna White, Wheel of Fortune.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I would not object or call you out for that one. I would go with, I don't know if it was my first, but it was probably, if it wasn't my number one, it was my number two, Kelly Kapowski from Saved by the Bell.
Oh, absolutely. I liked Vanna White before I liked Kelly Kapowski. Not that I didn't like either. Right. I mean, I liked both of them, so I think we're both in concert there. I only say this on this date in 1863. This is not a political statement. I only say this because this is where Mike Bell is. He is in Gettysburg, and on this date in 1863, the Battle of Gettysburg and the Civil War ended. So there you go. So I'll only say that to say that that's where Mike is today because he's visiting family over the course of the last couple of weeks in not only Pennsylvania but also in West Virginia. It is Dukes and Bell, Willie P. and Nick Kale in for Carl. Top three headlines at 6. If you missed our conversation with Mike Griffith of Dog Nation, you'll want to hear what he says about the Dogs' offense in 2020. That comes your way next. Willie P. and Nick Kale in for Dukes and Bell, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and Radio.com.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Andy and Randy, middays 10 till 2.
We haven't talked to Coach Pierce in a while.
We haven't talked to Coach Pierce since Media Day. We know our show just first started. We got Coach on, and now we're like, okay, we're going to get Coach on during the season, and then he leaves it for the morning show. You could have gave us a heads up. Was that your decision?
Kind of. T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.